It seems that for as long as human beings have been around, certainly for as long as we have recorded history, we know that people have been fascinated by dreams, by their vividness, by their strangeness, and they have wrestled with the same questions, I think, across time and across culture. The questions like, what are dreams? Why do we dream? Where do they come from? And what, if anything, do they mean? This morning, in this part of the show, we'll be talking about dreams and some of what we have learned about dreams over the last roughly 50 years of scientific research on the subject. And our guest for the program is Andrea Rock. She is a science writer. She has won a number of awards for her work. And she is the author of a recently published book, which is titled The Mind at Night, The New Science of How and Why We Dream. It's published by Basic Books, and it is out now in bookstores if you want to take a look at it. And, of course, as we talk this morning, questions are welcome. We always invite people to call in. All we ask is that people try to be brief so that we can get in as many people as possible and keep the program going. But, of course, anyone's welcome to call. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us. If it would be a long-distance call for you, you're around Illinois and Indiana. In fact, if you would happen to be listening on the Internet, as long as you're in the United States, you may use that toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Ms. Rock, hello.
Good morning.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate it. It seems that this is one of those subjects that I would imagine that for a science writer, for someone who writes about medical scientific issues, this is a great opportunity because there's a lot of fascinating work to report on, and it's something that you can expect almost it will engage the interest of almost everyone, and it's something that everyone has some personal experience with. So it's an opportunity not only to do some journalism work, but engage your personal curiosity.
Oh, exactly. I mean, from just a personal perspective, I've always been curious about why the brain doesn't simply, you know, take a rest at night along with the rest of the body, but instead creates this completely realistic artificial world that feels totally real while you're in it. You know, both in terms of visual imagery and the emotions you experience, and spins plots that can somehow keep you on the edge of your seat, even though you're the one who's creating them. So it's kind of an unusual situation and a great way to look at how the brain works.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that almost everyone, will be able to relate some memory of a dream, a particularly vivid ones. There are some that maybe you haven't stick with you for a long time. It is also the case, and you talk in the book about people who, in the process of trying to understand what happens in the brain in dreaming, have looked at people with various kinds of brain injuries, mm-hmm. which in some cases actually mean people don't dream. But mm-hmm. aside from that, if someone whose brain is quote-unquote in normal shape, everybody does dream, and that we dream probably a lot, much more than we would remember.
Exactly. On average, people remember only about 1% of their dreams. So if you feel like you don't have good recall, you're in good company. But the science suggests that we were never actually intended to recall our dreams in the first place by nature's design. It's just sort of an accident that we have the capacity to do that. But that even though we can't recall them, that dreams do perform their function nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of things that we could talk about, and already I have some callers. But I guess one sort of bottom line thing we might talk about here a little bit at the beginning does come under that heading of what sort of function do dreams have.
Mm-hmm.
And people report all kinds of anecdotal kind of evidence about how it is they feel their daily experiences end up getting into their dreams, mm-hmm. and relate, and then how their dreams relate to their waking life. There's a lot of things that people who research dreams don't agree on,
mm-hmm.
but generally there does seem to be some agreement that in fact dreams do perform an important function for us, mm-hmm. and that they do have something to do with integrating our experience, what happens to us in our daily lives, getting that somehow wired into our brains.
Exactly. And it really only has been, rapid eye movement sleep, which is when the most vivid and the majority of dreams occur, was really only discovered actually here in Illinois at the University of Chicago in the mid-1950s. And up until then, the scientific consensus was that the brain did basically shut down at night and just sort of go into routine maintenance. But in fact, in the past decade or so, we've been able to use brain imagery techniques to be able to actually look at what parts of the brain are most active during dreaming. And one of the theories now is that REM sleep itself may have evolved in animals as a means of processing and processing new information from the day that was important for survival, you know, how to escape that tiger, not to eat those red berries that were poisonous, when the brain is offline at night, and to rehearse that kind of behavior, escape behavior that is related to survival. And in fact, when you look at how dreaming has evolved in humans, it's acquired more than just that kind of rerun of important experience from the day. What additional layers are added is that it does seem to be a process where new information from the day is integrated into our existing memory store.
And so for those people who say something, and you will get people telling stories like, there was some problem I needed to solve, something I was thinking about a lot, and I wasn't sure how to deal with it, and I was maybe thinking about it before I went to sleep, and when I woke up, I had a solution. People tell stories like that, so there's actually some reason to believe, in fact, that that kind of thing may indeed happen.
Yes, actually, there's many scientists, artists, and people just reporting everyday kind of problem solving that comes to them during dreaming. And there is a scientific basis for that that has to do with the very different physical operating conditions that prevail during rapid eye movement sleep, which is when most dreams occur. And basically, the difference is that the logical planning thinking part of the brain that prevails in waking consciousness is pretty much offline, that region of the brain during REM sleep. And what is most active are the emotional centers and also the predominant neurochemical, brain chemical circulating during REM sleep is one that fosters free-form association so that you make connections that you wouldn't make in waking consciousness. And so things that your logical mind might reject during waking hours, the brain doesn't question, and that provides the basis for these kind of new breakthroughs and creativity that can come during dreaming.
Well, not surprisingly, we have a number of phone calls. So we'll try to get again to some of the basic points as we continue the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than make people wait, let's go ahead and see what's on their minds. We have
sure.
A couple of people who are calling on cell phones. So we'll start with line number one. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I don't work in the field that's covered in your book, but I've had a long interest in cognitive processes, not so much the mind as the brain. And I've just read Edelman's book on consciousness and
mm-hmm.
Hopkins' book on sleeping. What I wanted to say is simply that I read your book 10 days ago, and it is by far the best book that I have ever read on sleeping and what goes on in the brain. And I just wanted to recommend that.
Oh, thank you.
Read that book. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. And I guess I would want to second that, particularly for people who might be interested in the subject, but would be concerned about something that would be overly technical, and I think it's not. It is definitely written for the general reader, so one shouldn't worry that if you're not a psychologist or haven't spent a lot
exactly.
of time studying
the
brain.
Exactly, I'm not either, and that was my goal, was to make this information, which I find fascinating myself, accessible to people who don't have a science background.
All right, let's talk next with another mobile phone person here, right on line four. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to ask a question about a particular dream. Is that okay? that I had?
Sure.
If you can, well, when I was going to have a baby, I had a dream that I was, like, in the fire, and then I felt this real cool hand grab me, and I felt completely at peace, and I woke up, I was in a lot of pain, and I lost my baby, and I wondered, can you ever dream about things that are going on in your body?
I didn't do a lot about that in the book, but there have been lots of reports about that, and it may be that in the suggestion is that there may be portions of your brain that are receptive to signals that are being passed, actual physical information that is overlooked during waking consciousness. So there may be, some basis for that, but there hasn't been a lot of research, to document that phenomenon, although it is, I have heard it reported often.
Well, thank you, because, when you dream about death like that, you never forget that dream.
Oh, sure.
It's something that haunts you.
Well, and also there are consistent, I guess this sort of leads into another issue, which is that the other thing that we've discovered about dreaming is that it really is controlled by the emotional centers of the brain. And so in humans, it is during REM sleep, when most of our dreams are happening, it is emotionally charged memory, and particularly disturbing or difficult emotions that are targeted for being processed. And those emotions, the dream plot and the characters and everything that's happening in the dream is basically a visual metaphor to express and deal with whatever that predominant emotional concern is. And you'll see consistent things. Pregnant women often have dream plots that revolve around anxiety about, is the baby going to be okay? Am I going to be able to take care of the baby? Am I still attractive because my body's changing? So dream plots that all kind of contextualize those emotions. And so you'll see some consistencies in that way. But when you're trying to interpret a dream, really what you're looking at is how does what was happening visually express an emotion that, may be on my front burner, even though I am not aware of it, during the day.
Well, I really appreciate that, and thank you for answering my question.
All right, well, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We have as our guest this morning, this part of Focus 580, Andrea Rock. She is a science writer. She's won a number of awards for her work, including the National Magazine Award and also the award of the American Academy of Family Physicians. She has written a book about dreaming, and it takes a look at some of the scientific research that's been done, roughly speaking, over the last 50 years, as we have learned more and more about dreams and what happens in the brain when people dream. Her book is titled The Mind at Night, The New Science of How and Why We Dream. It's published by Basic Books, and it's really fascinating. So if you're interested in that subject, you can go out and look for the book. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers to call. And we have someone up next here listening in Indiana, and we'll go there. Line two. Hello?
Yes, when you mentioned the 1% retrieval, that mm-hmm. sort of surprised me. But along the question I have, I'm one of those people at the party when people start talking about their dreams, and most of the people I encounter have recent dreams, like last night or a couple days ago. I have to go back months sometimes, mm-hmm. and basically I end up coming up with generic dreams I had as a child and things that, are more realistic than the real and that sort of thing. And people I encounter at work and all that sort of thing, I just wonder if I'm, in a very small subset or what, because I certainly don't have dream, or at least I don't remember mm-hmm. the dreams that like other people do. That's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely. I mean, actually, there are when they've done studies to try to see if there are differences among people who have better recall than other people. About the only thing that they can come up with is that people who are have strongly developed visual spatial abilities and who are involved in creative pursuits as part of their line of work. I mean, there was a study done of people who do filmmaking at the filmmakers who were at the Sundance Film Festival, and they seem to have greater recall and more vivid dreams, but they work in that kind of visual medium, and it may be that their brain circuitry for creating that kind of thing is stronger than most people's. But when they do studies in sleep labs, even people like you who claim that they don't dream, when they are awakened, when they're in the midst of REM sleep, they consistently are dreaming. And one of the subjects, I actually spent a night in the lab, and the guy, as he was being wired for the experiment, said, I used to think I never dreamt, but every time I'm in the lab, they wake me, and I'm having this vivid dream, and I realize this must be happening every night, but I don't recall it. There are things you can do to improve your dream recall, though, which include, really, the most effective thing is having the intent before you go to sleep, saying, and I'm going to be dreaming, and having the intent to remember, and then when you first awaken in the morning, before you change position even, or allow thoughts of the day to intrude, if you can just allow yourself to try to focus on what was in your mind right before you awakened, and if you begin keeping a dream journal of those that you do remember, that seems to improve dream recall also.
Okay, thank you.
All right, mm-hmm. Thanks. That does really raise this interesting question about why it is that there seems to be such a poor, at least in most people, such a poor or maybe hardly no connection at all between the dream and memory, and why is it that it doesn't become incorporated in our memory like other things?
Yeah, and it's an interesting situation because what's the studies show, what's happening is that dream, particularly during REM sleep, dream time is a period when experience that is being transferred, daily experience, from short-term memory into long-term memory. So the areas of the brain that are involved in long-term memory processing and storage are very active during REM sleep, but the other regions of the brain that are required for putting events in sequential order and storing short-term memory, I'm actually storing the process of dreaming as it's occurring, are almost offline. They're down to idling speed, and some of the neurochemicals that you need for focusing attention and being able to store things in short-term memory that are predominant during the daytime are in short supply also. So it really does have to do with kind of the physiological condition of the brain. And we weren't really designed to, the whole process, we weren't designed to remember the dream itself. It's basically the process can take place, the transfer of experience into memory and the kind of emotional processing that affects our mood during the day. All of that can occur whether we recall the dream or not. Hmm.
It's really interesting that in connecting with this idea that somehow what dreaming is about is it's taking experience and programming that, wiring that into our brains. It's interesting that when you look at how the amount of REM sleep increases over the life course of humans. Well, first of all, if you look at what happens in the womb, apparently fetuses are in REM all the time, and then newborns are in REM about half of the time that they're asleep. So that very obviously that it tends to try to support that idea that, yes, that's really what's about. Mm-hmm. It's taking either pre-programmed material and incorporating that, maybe in the case of the fetus, and then as soon as you're actually out there in the world and taking in experience like a newborn, then it's taking stimulus, experience, stuff that happens to you while you're awake, and again, doing that same thing.
Exactly, and during it appears that what's happening in the womb is that the DNA-coded instructions that are important for survival are literally the brain is being wired, and in infants, that process is continuing, which is why there's so much REM and why you see things like, when you see an infant smiling in its sleep, and that usually occurs before the time when they can actually do that in waking consciousness. It's as if, the instructions for how to do you know, things that are important for survival are actually being placed into the brain during REM in that phase.
Let's talk with some other people. Farmer City, next caller. This is line three. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Just a side comment. If a fetus is having REM sleep, it kind of gives you a different outlook on whether it's a tissue mass or a human being. My question was, ordinarily dreams, you know, my dreams had been just, you know, disjointed, jumping from this to that, mm-hmm. you know, the usual stuff. When I went on antidepressants about a year ago, they started turning into just coherent, plotted movies that I remember in great detail, and everything that happens in them is in great detail and logical. What's going on there?
That's interesting you bring that up. A researcher at Harvard has been just did a study in the past couple of years documenting that exact phenomenon, and they don't understand yet why that's going on, because he was looking, I assume you're talking about antidepressants in the SSRI category,
yes,
Prozac,
yes.
That was what he was studying, and those, it's a strange situation because they tend to decrease the amount of REM sleep that people have, but
really?
But to increase the vividness of dreaming and dream recall. So they're just starting to try to tease that apart and find out why that might be the case.
Hmm. Well, it's a great asset to a creative career. I get a lot of plot ideas for that. Thank you.
All right,
sure.
Thanks for the call. Well, that, again, it brings back to mind that you started talking at the beginning about how the sort of the modern age of scientific research on dreaming is really only about 50 years old, and mm-hmm. it begins in the early 50s when it was discovered that human beings periodically throughout the night as they sleep have these periods of rapid eye movement. And then if when that's happening, you wake the person up, they will tell you that at that time they were dreaming. So there was this idea that association between REM, the abbreviation REM and dreams, and the thought was that, well, during that time the people are in rapid eye movement, they're dreaming, but then that would mean that the rest of the time that they're not. But one of the things that later was discovered is that there is not this absolute association between REM and dreaming, and apparently dreams can occur at other times in the sleep cycle, and when people are not having rapid eye movement.
Exactly, and that's an area that's still being explored. That it appears, and one of the researchers who's been leading that is a man named Mark Solms, who actually discovered that damage to an area of the brain that is involved in, he calls it the I want it system. It's the same brain region that lights up when a drug addict just sees images of drug paraphernalia and that sort of thing. It's involved in our most basic drives. That if there's damage to that area, dreaming ceases. And his contention is that REM sleep and dreaming are actually two separate processes with separate on and off switches, and that most dreams occur during REM sleep because that's when the brain is most highly activated, and there has to be a certain level of activation for dreaming to occur. But even in REM, it won't occur if he thinks what the trigger is the drug the neurochemical dopamine, which is involved in that whole section of the I wanted the basic drives of the brain, that's involved and is key to turning on the dreaming process.
Yeah. That's interesting that in the introductory, in one of the first sections of the book, you profile him, the man you just mentioned, and also another very famous brain and sleep researcher, a guy named J. Allen Hobson, who in fact has been interviewed on this program. I've talked to him. It's been quite a long time, but I actually talked to him. And, you know, Hobson was one of the things that he's characterizes his approach as he's very anti-Freudian.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that said, well, his idea of dreaming was the fact that rather than being shut down when our body is resting, the brain is continually active. There's all this activity going on there. And that what happens is that the kind of the higher regions of the brain look at all of this stuff that's going on in the brain and try to, because it's our nature to make sense of things,
mm-hmm.
to make up a story to fit this seemingly sort of random activity in the brain. And so he looked at Freud, who said that, well, what dreaming was about was messages from the unconscious, and it was about those drives and desires that in our waking life we tell ourselves we can't do, and that what we're doing is in our dreams fulfilling all those emotional drives. And interesting that this other researcher, this guy Mark Solms, when he said, well, he thought, in fact, dreams come from this place that lights up with desire. He said, well, in an interesting sort of way, that goes back to maybe support what Freud said,
mm-hmm.
That in fact that really is what motivates dreams. It comes from this place in our brain where our desires are hidden, and that because our logical thinking parts of the brains are turned off, it gives the emotional parts free rein to do what they will. And this, I guess, led to a long argument between these two guys, which really hasn't been resolved to this date.
Not entirely, but I think where it's kind of come out at this point is that there's a sort of a middle ground that Freud was correct in saying that dreaming had a lot to do and was, you know, one of the driving factors in it was strong emotions, and that also plots were being created and by drawing from memory, and in some cases memory going back to childhood that may be memory that you don't bring up into your conscious recall during the day. And in fact, with each successive REM period, there's research that shows that older and older memory further and further removed from current experience is incorporated into the dream plot. So there is evidence for that, and Solms' evidence that you know about the brain region involved with desire being involved. On the other hand, it also appears that Hobson's point is true, that you don't need to. That one of Freud's other contentions was that everything in a dream is just, you know, code that has to be, you know, broken, and there's symbols to, you know, everything's disguised and so on, and meaning has to be extracted by using these, you know, dictionaries of symbols and determining meaning from that. And in fact, what it looks like is that no, the meaning is there on the surface. It's transparent. It's the brain using metaphor as we do in waking life. It's not just a literary device. It's an important part of how we think. So when people have, you know, the very common dream of, you know, flying, and it's associated with, you know, usually a feeling of happiness and elation, I mean, that is to some extent a visual expression of how we use phrases to express happiness, you know, high as a kite, you know, walking on air, that sort of thing. And so to try to interpret meaning from a dream, you really have to look at it in terms of how does what the visual imagery or the metaphor, sometimes there are even puns, and the brain is very creative in punning in dreams. How does that express what's maybe the driving emotion, and how does that relate to your own individual circumstances and what's going on in your daily life?
A little bit past the midpoint here. We have some other calls. I'll get right back to them, and I just want to introduce again our guest. We're talking with science writer Andrea Rock, and the book, if you're interested, is titled The Mind at Night, The New Science of How and Why We Dream, published by Basic Books. I have several callers here. Next is line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Have you addressed comments? I've just tuned in. Have you addressed comments regarding people who see things in their dreams that actually come true? You know, that actually transpire?
I haven't, because I agree that it's something that's reported often. So it appears to be, you know, a phenomenon that's reported in many cultures and throughout time. But there hasn't really been any research to kind of document what might be going on there, or, you know, really looking into that process, but it certainly is something that I've heard and that has been reported, from the earliest times.
Yeah. Do you have thoughts on the phenomenon?
I don't. I've stuck completely to looking at the science and what the science can tell us at this point, but it doesn't mean that may not be a real thing that's happening. It's just, there's no way to really look at it at this point in terms of how to explain what that is.
Further, might there be people that would perhaps be interested in the understanding of what goes on by encountering a person or testing a person or whatever? Because I'm curious, a family member seems to have that ability, and it's quite uncanny, and it's borne out many times. Any name there, or any place to perhaps pursue that?
Well, you might. There's an organization called the Association for the Study of Dreams, and you could find it on the internet. And there are people who, within that group, I know are interested in looking at those kinds of phenomena. So, yes, I if you have someone who seems to be adept at that, that would be a good place to start.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, let's go to line number 2, and this is also Urbana. Hello.
Hello. My question was about dreaming about flying, and I used to have those dreams, and even in the middle of the dream, I'd think, oh, my gosh, this is just a dream. And then I'd say, no, it's so real. But right in the middle of the dream, I thought I was really doing it. It was like soaring above the trees and buildings. But you said it was happiness. But at the time I was having these dreams, I was under lots of stress from my job. I was wondering if you could explain it.
Sometimes what's happening can be an expression of, what your wish is, that's the feeling you want to have versus the feeling that you're having in waking life. But you also mentioned that you became aware in the dream, that it was a dream, and that's really the beginning of another interesting process for which there has been some substantial scientific research documenting that it does occur, and it does occur while you are in the midst of REM sleep. And that's something called lucid dreaming. And I think most people have had the experience of just momentarily having that realization while the dream is still going on, I'm dreaming.
But I would say, oh, no, I'm just dreaming. And then I'd say, no, this is really real. I'm really doing this.
Well, in a sense, it is, because that was one of the other interesting things. Because of the conditions in your brain during that period of sleep, your muscles are paralyzed other than your eye muscles. But when your brain is sending commands and creating, this sort of realistic world, you're, for the purposes of the motor area and the cortex of your brain and so on, it doesn't know that the commands that have been given have not been carried out. So, in a sense, what you experience in a dream is real from the brain's perspective. It is not just like you've done it. It is, from its perspective, the same as having done it. So that is the fact that it felt real to you, there's a good physiological reason for it feeling so real.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, let's go to line number 3. This is also Urbana. Line 3. Hi.
Yeah. I had an interesting sort of reaction, is that the relationship between dreaming and brainstorming, because in brainstorming, what you do is you actually suspend. I've been involved in those processes, and in other words, it's sort of wishful things, and it'll be interesting to see whether the parallel between the two.
Yes, and actually, that's one of some areas of research they've been trying to do, and they're hoping to do more with brain imaging, looking at the brain regions that are activated during dreaming versus during waking consciousness in those kinds of mental states. People involved in a creative process in the midst of writing something or painting or doing theoretical math. or someone in a state of meditation, how does that compare? Because, you know, when it gets down to it, it's our particular state of consciousness at any given point in time is based on what the physiological conditions are in the brain, and making this fine distinction between, well, there's waking and there's, you know, dreaming, the line may not be, you know, so finely drawn, and there may be more subtle shades of consciousness in various states of waking versus dreaming, and then lucid dreaming, which is yet another category where you've got conscious awareness at the same time that you're dreaming.
Yeah, well, I've seen it work in groups where you work in terms of building brainstorming with a group of three or four people, and it's amazing the connections that come up. And there's, as you know, there's different techniques for brainstorming. So that's the only comment.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
That's great.
We'll go on again to a caller in southeastern Illinois. This is line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, before my question, I have a comment on an earlier call. It wouldn't be exactly the same in the brain as though you were doing it, in the sense that that your brain wouldn't be sending messages to your muscles, your arms to move, your legs to, you know, to move in the same way that the brain would be transmitting messages to the muscles in real life, would it?
Well, the commands are transmitted, and the outcome of those demands or commands are computed by the brain. From the researchers I talked to, they said that actually, from the perspective of, you know, the motor areas in the cortex, it is as if you have carried out those activities, even though the muscles haven't completed the action, which is why musicians, you know, will report, for instance, that, you know, when they're learning a new piece of music and then, but they're having difficulty with it, or a gymnast learning a new routine and so on, that after two or three nights' sleep, they'll suddenly have an improvement in performance, even though they haven't practiced in the meantime. And, you know, it's because there is this mental rehearsal that goes on that actually is more effective, you know, when it occurs during REM sleep than it would be for people who, you know, say athletes who just do this kind of visualization process in waking consciousness, which is also, I guess, deemed to be effective. But
That's very interesting. My question, I don't know whether you would know this or not, but is there any indication that that if the waste level in the blood is increased, that triggers increased dreaming? And I'm thinking, for example, of some people who need kidney dialysis, and they are approaching the time when they haven't had dialysis for a while, or maybe they have missed a dialysis. Does that increase waste level in the blood trigger increased dreaming?
I haven't heard anything about. I know, you know, certain medications can affect it, but as for that specific condition, I'm not sure.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. Other calls are welcome. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, talking with Andrea Rock about her book, The Mind at Night, The New Science of How and Why We Dream. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that you write about is researchers who have collected catalogs, essentially, of subjects of dreams. They've gone out and they've asked people, as many people as they can, just to tell them what it is that they dream about, and then try to make comparisons, say, across culture. And also they've looked at how it is that the content of dreams change as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that one of the things that apparently researchers have found, that if you look at what it is people dream about and look cross-culturally, that we are more alike than we are different, and that people seem to dream a lot of the same sort of things.
Exactly. Across all cultures, the dream of being chased or pursued is the most common dream theme, you know, and that has to do with what we were talking about earlier about, you know, sort of the biological origins of dreaming and survival rehearsal, survival skills rehearsal and that sort of thing. Some of the other consistencies are that women, no matter what the culture, women's dreams tend to contain an equal number of male and female characters, but men, in men's dreams, almost 70% of the characters are other men. And men generally also have more physical aggression in their dreams than women do. The highest proportion of physical aggression in dreams of the places studied were people in small tribal societies and aboriginal society. But among industrialized countries studied, Americans actually ranked highest for aggression in dreams. I mean, there was 50% of American males' dream content involved physical aggression. Hmm.
And one thing I thought was interesting, again, this makes one think about Freud and his argument that what dreams were about was desires that we suppress. People perhaps might have this idea that a lot of dreaming is about sex. And in fact, if you ask people about how much they're dreaming about sex, it's really not all that much.
Yeah, when they looked at that, it ranged between 10% and 30%. It tended to be higher for college students. So, you know, it may reflect a little bit more of a current life experience and stage of life. But
could be. A lot of unfulfilled desire out there.
Right.
Let's talk with some other people listening. Here's someone back in Champaign-Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I actually have many, many things to ask, but I'll try to limit it to just two questions. But before I started, I just wanted to tell you that I used to have, in terms of punning in dreams, I was at one point dating somebody older, and I had this dream at night that I was getting married, and But my fiance was over the hill, and I had to keep finding him, and I didn't think about it.
Oh,
the next morning,
that's
I told
great.
Him this dream, and I said, "You were over the hill," and he said, "I see." So,
and
in
did
terms
he,
of punning, I understand that.
Did he find that amusing?
He found that very amusing.
He did. Oh, okay, good.
But then I actually had two questions. The first is in terms of dream comparison and some symbols that people may have in common. I have always dreamt about houses, and it's clear to me that when I dream about houses that I'm dreaming about some part of myself. It sort of represents me, and going into different rooms, I know that it's me I'm looking at. But when my current boyfriend also talks about his dreams and houses, he says that's not what it means. Do you find that to be true, that people, it's an individual thing, or do you find that some symbols are actually go through many people's dreams?
Well, when they do these studies of content, and they're not really trying to interpret. They're really just looking at what is it that people dream about, what appears most often. And certainly houses, you know, are, you know, among the most common settings, and generally it's houses that are a combination of many different houses. You know, it's not, you know, an exact replication of where you live now or even where you lived as a kid or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, that has to do partly with that kind of hyper-associative state that your brain's in during dreaming, pulling a piece of this and a piece of that and putting it together with something else. As far as interpreting what it means, you know, again, it really, you know, if for you, you can look at it and say, this is a metaphor that my brain is doing the same as your brain created that pun, you know, that happens to be how the image that your brain uses to express something that you're feeling.
Right.
And so that's perfectly valid, you know, for you. But the main thing is that to derive meaning from it, the key has to come from you. It, you know, it can't come from looking at a book and saying, oh, if I dreamt that, it means this, you know.
Right, yes, I've noticed that. And my last question, and I will hang up after, is that you talked about the function of dreams and talking about basically how you learn different things at night, how you resolve some problems. And I was wondering if you had heard about the study. I tuned in rather late, so you might have already mentioned it. But the study about the mice in the mazes, and the researchers had noticed that at night they were actually going through the mazes.
Yes, it's actually it was rats, but it's I talked to the guy who did that study, and it's a wonderful one because what it does is really demonstrate that there is that mental replay of experience going on. And what they were doing is they were able to record the firing patterns of individual brain cells in rats who were, during the waking hours, learning to run a maze. And then when they were sleeping, they were also recording, you know, from those brain cells, and they were completely startled to discover that when the rats went into REM sleep, they were seeing the exact same firing patterns that they'd seen when the rat was in the maze during the day, and in fact, that the match was so precise that they could actually pinpoint which part of the maze the rat was in its mental replay of experience during sleep.
Right. Do you happen to know the name of the researcher?
Yeah, Matthew Wilson. He's at MIT.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. On to line number two. This is an Urbana listener. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about possible effects of possible research on Alzheimer's disease related to diagnosis and treatment, and possible effects of medication that's used, such things as Aricept and Amantine, on dreams and Alzheimer's. And I don't know how much research is being done in that area.
That I haven't heard much about. It's not Alzheimer's, but the only other sort of link in that kind of disease of aging that I've seen to sleep is that there is something called REM sleep disorder that tends to occur in men starting around age 50, and the symptoms get more severe, as they get into their 60s. But in that, the brain set up where the muscles are paralyzed is disrupted, and they actually act out their dreams, begin to physically act out dreams, and sometimes violently. And what they have discovered is that people who have that disorder, that it also tends to be a precursor of Parkinson's disease. In one of the studies, I think two-thirds of the men who had REM disorder went on to develop Parkinson's, so that it may have to do with damage to a particular type of brain network that's involved in Parkinson's as well.
All right, thank you.
All right, and to another Urbana person. This is line three. Hello.
Hi, I'm in Urbana, and I have a question. I've noticed something quite interesting throughout my life, and it's happened just maybe on a couple of occasions, but I have had a dream, and then years later, like maybe 10 years later, during the day, that dream will come back to me very, very clear.
And it didn't at the time? You didn't recall it?
Meaning?
At the time that you first dreamed it. I mean, you had recall of it that the next day, and then...
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. But what really startled me was that that I remembered that I had this dream. And so I was just curious if that's something common that you can have, or and then maybe you can remember that dream again in the future, like maybe 5 years later, or that'll just come back to you. Have you heard anything about something like that?
No, but it would tend to make sense in a way. One of the there's a great phrase I think that a researcher here in Chicago at Rush Presbyterian, Rosalind Cartwright, uses to describe the way that the brain is making associations during dreaming. It's not like the linear thought process we have during the day, but it's more like Scotch plaid, that
right.
that one thing gets associated with another that based on emotion.
Uh-huh.
And if there was a similar feeling aroused, so it can be that you had that earlier dream, and then something in waking life, 5 years later, is associated with the same emotion, that's connected with that dream, and so it's activating those memory circuits, and it comes back.
Right, even subconsciously, because there was no rhyme or reason why I would remember that dream.
Right. Well, that was the other startling thing in doing the research. I mean, the proportion of our mental activity that actually occurs outside of our conscious awareness is immense. I mean, it's more than 90%. So that kind of activation of memory that may not even be conscious memory, or may not even be, directed by you, you're not consciously recalling,
right.
Occurs all the time.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. And we'll try to be real quick here. One more caller in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah. I also view it, too, as when you think of it as sort of a stress reduction. you think in terms of dreaming.
Exactly.
And then the other point was that the earlier caller that you had about the house and all that kind of, it's almost like a Rorschach test. In other words, people see different things in the same object.
That's a perfect way to put it, and it much more personal than a Rorschach, because you're creating the ink blot yourself.
Yeah. In a Rorschach, there's supposedly norms, and if you go off the norms, you're crazy or whatever. But in this case, so anyway, that was just some comments. I keep listening to the thing, and I'm the one that talked about the brainstorming, so I keep getting stimulated in terms of views of this thing. So anyway, great.
Well, and you're right about the therapeutic value. I don't think we have time to go into it, but there is a lot of evidence showing that people who go through trauma, that dreaming plays a role in helping them resolve the trauma and get back on keel.
Well, we certainly know what happens with people who are sleep deprived. I mean, there's all sorts of physical symptoms of exhaustion. Is there also a problem with being dream deprived?
There's conflicting evidence about that, and that question actually hasn't been resolved yet. But when you look at the evidence about what's happening during that process, I'd be surprised if there weren't some negative effect in terms of at least mood regulation. And in fact, there is evidence showing that people who suffer from clinical depression have a much different pattern of dreaming than people who don't.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to stop. I'm sorry to say. I'm sure we could go on. I'm sure whenever people meet you and they say, well, what have you written about lately? You say, I've written this book about dreams. That's it.
I had a dream last night.
Exactly. It's, I had this dream. What does it mean? There's a lot of fascinating stuff in the book. It's titled The Mind at Night, The New Science of How and Why We Dream. It's published by Basic Books by our guest, Andrea Rock. And we want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you. It was fun.